Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Recently, a particular species of seahorse washed up on a Cork beach. This is, to put it mildly, a rarity. It's only the seventh time this has happened. But that doesn't mean there aren't seahorses out there. Keelan Doyle is the founder of the Seahorse Aquarium in Dublin. Keelan, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Sean. How are things?
So, do seahorses live around the coast of Ireland?
They do, but they're very hard to find, right? And the reason being that they're the poorest swimmer in the ocean. So how they survive is not getting found.
Yes, okay, and fair enough.
And it's camouflage. They will literally mimic whatever they hold on to. So if they hold on to a piece of seaweed, they will change the colour to that seaweed. And they are extremely difficult to find in the ocean.
Yeah, so are there particular parts of the ocean that they're drawn to? It's like they need cover, I assume.
Yeah, they love seagrass. So seagrass is underwater grass meadows of the ocean. And you get these sort of fields of grass, stunning, stunning places. But fishermen don't tend to fish there because their nets get caught. And scuba divers don't tend to dive there because their face gets stung by little cuttlefish. So it's a kind of a undiscovered paradise under the ocean. But this is where the seahorses survive and thrive.
And around Ireland, do we have many of these areas of seagrass?
Yeah, I mean, seagrass is phenomenal. I mean, it sequests more CO2 than anything else in the world. It's not just a habitat for seahorses. It's where most fish species will go and lay their young because it's a safe environment. And it's also a food for lots of species like turtles. But the big, big issue is that seagrass has been wiped out around the world at an alarming rate. I mean, we're losing 7% per year, which is the equivalent of the size of Croke Park every 30 minutes. So every half an hour, the area the size of Croke Park gets wiped out.
And what's wiping it out?
It's runoff. So seagrass needs very clear, crystal clear waters, but the oceans are becoming more full of sediment. Where is that coming from? Agricultural runoff into the water. So it's basically more murky, and it's a huge issue. And once that happens, the light doesn't get through to the seagrass and we lose it.
Oh, my word. Do seahorses need a certain temperature of water, or I suppose maybe does it depend on the species of seahorse?
Yeah, it depends. Like there's 48 species, one's from the size of your fingernail up to the size of, you know, your hand. We've two species around the Irish coast, which there's the long snouted and the short snouted. And they're incredible. I mean, you have to understand these are animals that have existed since the time of dinosaurs, and they're literally all over the world. I'm sure some of your listeners might know the cool facts about seahorse. First of all, the female listeners love this. First of all, it's the male seahorse. He does a little sort of a courtship dance around the female every morning. He's a morning person. Not only that, they stay together for life. He's completely faithful for life. And if she passes away, he will die of a broken heart two weeks later. And not only that, wait for this, Sean, it gets better. Not only that, he is the only animal in the whole wide world that the male and not the female has the babies.
Yeah. And by looking after the babies, how do they feed them? Are they regurgitating food into their mouth, or how does that work for the babies?
So they don't. So what happens is once they give birth, and like when these guys do it, when the male seahorses do it, they can give birth to up to 4,000 baby seahorses.
Okay, that's a big responsibility.
So, Sean, when us lads do it, we do it right, as they say.
Yeah.
But in the ocean, less than 1 in 1,000 seahorses will survive. Where what we're doing is we've set up captive breeding projects in Asia, And because they're captive bred, you can then avoid any of what affects them in the wild. Currents, nothing eats them. And then we're releasing the seahorses. So essentially it's conservation through cultivation to help stop these guys from extinction.
What tends to prey on them?
Not a lot in the when I say not a lot of stuff intends to feed on them, because if you feel that seahorse is there, they're quite hard.
Yeah.
But things like crabs.
Is this an actual skeleton?
That's an actual skeleton.
Wow, and that's a whopper.
Yeah.
He's like, nearly a foot long, that fella. Yeah.
You get stuff like sharks, you get stuff like crabs, you get tuna. So, you know, they are sort of eaten by things. But the number one reason why seahorses are under threat of extinction is because of this. So have a read of that.
This is genital tonic pills.
So seahorse, you go.
What is it regarded as an aphrodisiac or
something? It's the most revered product as a natural aphrodisiac in traditional Chinese medicine. They've been using it for thousands of years. It's more expensive than gold. And the only reason that they would use it is because seahorses stay together for life. They believe that they're physically happy together. And as a result, they take it for medicinal reasons. If any of the listeners are interested, we have a documentary on Netflix called The Seahorse Man. And in that program, in one of the scenes, I go undercover to one of these the medicinal doctors. And I tell him I'm having sort of some male issues and of course seahorses is what's prescribed.
Yeah, they think seahorses are better lovers.
Well, they and even when they do their dance, you see them when they form. I know people can't see it, but you see they make a little
heart shape with each other. Yes.
A little love heart.
Yeah.
But they're amazing creatures, and I suppose the important thing is that we're now putting things in place, conservation measures in place. Number one, starting to breed them. But number two, cleaning the environment. So the seagrass I was saying earlier on that's been wiped out, what we found, along with other scientists, is that if we reintroduce native oysters, now this is mad, but oysters are the cleaners of the ocean.
Yeah.
Each oyster will filter 16 litres of water every hour. And you see these two beakers that I have in front of me? Two of them with dirty water, put an oyster in it 20 minutes before I came on, and look how clear. Isn't that
because
amazing?
The oysters, that's extraordinary.
That's what the oysters. We had oyster reefs around the Irish coast 500 million years ago. If anybody walks on the beach in Arklow, it's full of oyster shells, and we carbon dated them. Some of them are 4,000 years old. So what we're doing is putting the oysters back. That filters and cleans the water to let the light in, to let the seagrass grow, to let the seahorses thrive.
Yeah. Is it difficult to breed them in captivity?
It's difficult to get the young to survive. And for me, I suppose the challenge, if you look at the seahorses, and remember I was saying they do a dance and they kind of rise up in the water together, and she transfers the egg. See the way he has a pouch like a kangaroo?
Yeah.
And that's how they do it. A brief, really interesting story. People talk about science and, you know, all this intelligence and all this brains that go behind it. When we managed to crack the breeding of the seahorses, because you couldn't go on Google and find out, this was, nobody else had done it. And I had seahorses in all of these aquariums. We were trying to breed them. They were paired up. They were courting, but they weren't getting pregnant. And one evening I was coming in kayaking, and one of the paddles of the kayak fell, and it actually broke one of the tanks. And I didn't have another glass tank to put the seahorses in. All I had was this chemical barrel, washed it out, put the seahorses in, came in the next day, terrified. And what did I find? A pregnant male, our first pregnant male. And what was the answer? The answer was, all of a sudden, that it was in a tall tank, and the seahorses had time to swim up in the water together, transferred the egg. So it was the biggest breakthrough, and it was made by complete and utter fluke.
Yeah, so could you were able to then calculate how much vertical movement they need to impregnate?
Exactly. Essentially, we had seahorses in smaller tanks, and we now knew that they were sexually frustrated seahorses that couldn't get to finish the job.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. That's it. And so how many seahorses do you have in captivity now?
Well, as I say, what we do, a lot of our projects are in Cambodia, Philippines, Indonesia. So you have to realise that for us, it's the realisation. It's not just about saving the seahorse. It's about saving the families that rely on fishing the seahorse. So for us, it's to teach these people how to grow the seahorses so they then still have an income, but the seahorses in the wild get left and the numbers increase. We've then set up ecotourism where people can go and scuba dive and watch the seahorses in the wild. That then brings more income into the local communities. So everybody is involved, but most importantly, the seahorse gets to survive.
Yeah, and out in the seahorse aquarium, I assume you have different sorts of seahorses.
Yeah, so we do all kinds of species, all kinds of fish. I'm sure many of your listeners have been out to us, and we have everything from seahorses to all the standard tropical fish. And then we do education. So we're doing a big show tomorrow in the square in Talla. We have three shows from 12 to 3. It's free. It's for kids. We have some amazing species there and kids get to touch and feel. And it's all about educating kids and making them realise the wonders of the ocean and the importance of the ocean.
Yeah, they're kind of, and now there is, just to explain to people listening, that Keelan has brought in, there is one jar with two seahorses. There's something slightly mesmeric about, you could look at them all day long.
They are.
They're very graceful animals.
They're very mythical. And, you know, even if you go back to Roman times and Greek mythology, they were an integral part. They have two little holes at the top of their head, Sean, and they don't have teeth. So they create a vacuum, right? And when they create the vacuum, they suck the food in. And it's a sound like this, right? It's very loud. It's very distinctive. And they suck the food in so strong that it disintegrates into dust. But the cool bit is the remains of the food get puffed out through these top two holes, right? And many, many, many years ago in ancient times, the Greek sailors had seen this and they thought that they were the dragons of the ocean and they were terrified of them. And I wouldn't mind. They're the most docile, peaceful, lovable species on the planet. But they were terrified of them.
Yeah, Keelan, thanks a million for coming in to tell us all that today. That was Keelan Doyle, founder of the Save Our Seahorses campaign, also the founder of the Seahorse Aquarium. It's out at the Red Cow in Dublin.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.